I'm Daniel Centeno. You're listening to CGRU 1280 AM. This story is part of the Local Journalism Initiative. In a recent town hall meeting, FoodShare Toronto invited leaders from several city-based organizations to discuss how to tackle food insecurity and increase accessibility for several communities. FoodShare recently launched the Right to Food campaign, which is aimed towards asking the City of Toronto to update the Toronto Food Charter. The Food Charter is based on Canada signing the United Nations Covenant on Social, Economic, and Cultural Rights in 1976, which includes the fundamental right of everyone to be free from hunger. In the Charter, it states that the City of Toronto supports a national commitment to food security and that residents should have access to an adequate supply of nutritious, affordable, and culturally appropriate food. The town hall meeting addressed why the Food Charter must be updated, the experiences of particular communities requiring food security, certain barriers, and concrete steps towards solutions. The speakers in this conversation are Lori Hemiston of They Feed the People, Zakia Tafari of the African Food Basket, and Josephine Gray of the St. Jamestown Community Co-op.
Miigwech. Hello, everyone. Anin. My name is Lori Hemiston, and as my introduction said, I come from the North Shore of Ontario, a little community there called Sault Ste. Marie, where my family resides in my First Nation in Rankin Reserve, which is part of Batchewana First Nation. So that's me. That's where I come from. I am Eagle Clan, and I do have names and colors and things I connect within my community, but I save those for ceremony usually. But I will tell you that I am Eagle Clan, and a big part of my clan responsibility is to be a leader in the community and understand the needs of our people and really bring them home. And I was once told that, you know, we're fire starters. So we're the ones in the community that get the fire going and move ideas and energy through to meet the needs of our people. So that's a bit about where I come from. And it's, I think it's important that, you know, as an Indigenous person, I'm able to introduce myself in that way, and that it's understood, you know, that I do have I come from a particular society in my community. And that's a big part of, I think, where the food sovereignty conversation lies within Indigenous understandings of knowing and being, is that everybody has a role in our community. Everybody has a job, and Dash Mwamba Modzigen really is about that. What we're doing within our project is reigniting, re-understanding, and really bringing matriarchal roles into our community. It was started alongside of an organization in Toronto called Toronto Indigenous Harm Reduction. So we started really last June of 2020. We started on June 21st doing feasts and gatherings in the Parkdale community here in Toronto, and bringing ceremony and celebration along with food and just, you know, community gathering into that neighborhood, and really with a very strong harm reduction approach attached to it that really is that principle of everybody has the right to gather and understand our culture and our ceremonies, and, you know, food is being a big part of that. So we started doing those gatherings with them and bringing cultural food whole local ingredients, things that people hadn't had for quite some time. I recall when we brought the food down, one of the first things that one of the people said to us when they had some perch was they knew it was Lake Erie perch. So the connection to the land, you know, the importance of that and what that means to our people, and really, you know, bringing back those really good memories. And we started to notice that people really hadn't even had, you know, things like moose meat or fresh fish or deer or wild rice for quite some time. So every week when we brought that down, it was a really good opportunity to gather and tell stories and find our relatives and, you know, work alongside of our family and our friends. We essentially also, you know, started to do food for the elders and bring food down to Wigwaman Terrace and do meals for them weekly, because again, they were really missing that connection to cultural prepared food. We have been doing that since, as I said, June of 2020, and really amped up with the elders in January of 2021. So we've been consistently offering that food and connecting with the community through food, and really, you know, bringing important supports through food as the introduction, really, right? To understanding what people need and how they need it.
So the Food Basket's an organization that's been around for 25 years, championing food justice for the African, Caribbean, Black community. It was founded by my parents. And being very honest, you know, when they started this organization, I was very naive to the bigger community needs. You know, growing up in a family that did, you know, we garden in our backyard, we were connected to urban farms, we would go strawberry picking, corn picking. I thought these were things that everybody did. But definitely as I got into social work, I realized that not everybody has strong connections to food, and really understanding the importance of championing food justice and having access to cultural food. More specifically around COVID, we launched something called the Black Food Toronto Program, because we knew that with all the lockdowns that were happening, the panic buying that was going on, members of our community were going to suffer. They were going to struggle to find food. They were going to struggle to access healthy food. And especially as the pandemic went on, you know, our seniors, our small families, we created a system through a website called Black Food Toronto, where folks could sign up and access a fresh basket of healthy, culturally sensitive foods. We would incorporate things like avocados, sweet potatoes, ginger, mangoes when possible, giving people healthy food. We also connected with local farmers. So when corn was in season, we'd be providing them with corn. We also run an urban farm up at Jane and Steeles at the Black Creek Farm. And we were able to grow things like kale, callaloo, tomatoes, cucumbers, and these are things that we incorporated into our baskets. At the height of what we were doing, we were providing support to over 500 households a week through the direct delivery drop-offs, as well as working with community partners such as CAFCAN, Taibu Community Health Center, and a number of other community partners to make sure that people had access to food. As I was able to go on some of these deliveries, you know, it was bittersweet to see people's response to getting a basket that had these kind of healthy food in it, being so thankful and so grateful to be able to have access to food. And, you know, given the Toronto Food Charter, you would think that this would not be an issue, especially in a city like this during this day and age, but it is, and it's a constant ongoing issue. And our organization is committed to making sure that we do our part to support community, provide access to healthy, culturally sensitive food, and encourage people as much as possible to get involved in various food systems so that they can be part of the solution themselves. There is talk about, you know, increasing sustainable funding and building community capacity. But what does that mean? You know, to me, capacity building is a nice buzzword that is used in the nonprofit sector. Let's, you know, support people in building the skills. There are so many of us who have the skills. You know, my dad has done this work for 25 years, and I've watched him struggle to make the case. To be very honest, I don't think we would even have this Black Food Sovereignty Plan if it wasn't for COVID-19. COVID-19 really showed everybody how close we are to not having access to food. Our community was already 24% more likely to be food insecure than anybody else. So it was only magnified through COVID-19. You know, my dream is saying, listen, city, get out of our way. You know, there's too much bureaucracy. There's too much red tape around things. There are so many vacant buildings across this city that the folks on this call, if we could get together and form several hubs across the city, we'd be able to increase access. And we've been asking for this for so long. You know, Josephine has been a huge ally of mine. She's known me since I was young. And, you know, look at that. You know, she's known me since I was a child. I'm now an adult doing the same work, and I'm advocating beside her because nothing has changed. You know, that is very sad. I would like for her to see, you know, the fruits of her labor, you know, and be able to enjoy it. You know, people like my dad and many other advocates who've been doing this work and saying that it is important for us to not even accept handouts. Let us lead this work. Let us create the solutions for ourselves. But we are trying to do that on an unlevel playing field. You know, we talk about space, and I look at the fact that I'm almost 40 years old, and I know many individuals who've been advocating for my community before I was born. Yes, there have been tons of programs that have been funded by the government, but you know what? We've always been barred from using any of that funding to own property. You know, if we had simply owned a building, owned a center, we could turn that center into whatever we needed to be. You know, if we owned land, we can leverage the equity in that land to go and get loans to further build and grow what we need to do. But we've been barred from doing that. We get grants that give us just enough money to maybe pay somebody for a couple of weeks or a couple of years, maybe buy the produce that we need, or, you know, deliver the program. But that's it. We don't get to invest in ourselves. We don't get to invest in property. And those are the things that, to me, really hold us back. And if the city is really committed to making this Black Food Sovereignty Plan work, I think that's one of the most important places they need to start. You know, there are many Toronto community housing buildings that have vacant units. You know, provide those vacant units to some of the folks here on these calls, and let us create mini food hubs if we can't create the giant ones that we want. And let us provide food access right there locally in community. And let us continue this network that we've formed and support each other. And then we will be able to grow and eventually have those bigger spaces. So to me, the first thing is we need to get on an equal playing field, and we need space. It's great to be able to pack baskets. It's great to be able to cook food. But again, like, you know, the sister mentioned on this call, if we don't have storage, that's been a huge issue of us. We could bring down the cost of what we're doing if we simply had, you know, a space that had a huge cooler where we could pack baskets early and store the extra food and be able to distribute that over time. There are so many simple solutions, in my opinion, but we just need folks to understand.
Josephine, I know you've been in this work for many, many years. Like, can you speak to, you know, the work you do and why it is also very critical at this time?
Well, thank you, Hansel. So as a single parent raising 4 to 5 children, depending who was in the house, for many years in a very poor downtown neighborhood, very, very diverse downtown neighborhood, I've seen a lot of changes over time. One of the, you know, long-term issues that we've had in this neighborhood, as we are a rival place for newcomers, but also a place where there are many Indigenous people in our immediate neighborhood. One of the concerns that many people have had is the quality of food that was available to them in the low price discount grocery stores. People really recognizing that a lot of the food they were able to afford was not good for them, and seeing that newcomers' health tends to deteriorate fairly rapidly. So this has been a long-term concern. We got very busy around 2011, working on trying to figure out how to help newcomers access more healthy food and navigate the North American food system, which is a very corporatized food system, more so than most of the world. I've watched many shifts and changes in our governance, in the way in which our democracy is no longer a democracy and the like. And it's been really frightening to see, you know, the trade rules, trade regimes, NAFTA, WTO, et cetera, how it plays out on the ground in our community in reducing and limiting our choices, our time, our incomes, and so many other things. So when the pandemic hit, you know, we were in the process of a long, exhausting process of trying to create a local, full cycle, eco-smart, healthy food hub. And we pivoted right away as fast as we could to try and do an emergency food project. And we allied with African Food Basket, Food Share, and others to try and bring as much healthy food into the neighborhood as we could. And, you know, in our neighborhood, that's a challenge because we want to fulfill the human right to food. And that includes affordable, healthy, clean, culturally appropriate, and making sure people have choice. So naturally, when you're doing emergency food and there people are tired of and way too accustomed to the limited choices that food banks offer, they were very excited and very happy that somebody cared and that they also could be directly involved in the process. We got lots and lots of volunteers and were able to deliver to all the buildings in this high-rise community, some 500 or so families every month. But then, you know, we lost a little space we had in the community center and to a vaccination clinic that took the space, and we tried to operate outside for a number of months, and now we've had to stop that. And right now, all we can really do is work with our local farmers to do a weekly farmers market. And we're waiting for some form of space so that we can work on the right to food again in St. Jamestown. It's been a pretty awful time, frankly. And it's, it seems to be just things getting worse rather than better at a time when the need is getting greater and greater. Well, I think for us, you know, the key thing is space. I mean, we still don't have any kind of a kitchen that we can access. There's a kitchen in the community center, but it's not certified. And they still, I mean, we've been trying to get it certified for almost 2 decades. Just the absolute inertia, like complexity of a system that is, on the one hand, got downloaded way too much responsibility back in 95 when Harris was elected. All of a sudden, the city was solely responsible for far too much. It never got the actual, you know, funding that it would need to meet those responsibilities. And it's been struggling ever since. So there's a combination of problems. And like very early on in our project, we just went to this, we went to the city and said, look, we just need permission zoning, your support and cooperation so that we can get, you know, other capital investments, et cetera, to create a food hub so we can have better food security. And even that seems to have been too much. And I've watched year after year as one policy statement as another after another comes forward. And even more recently, the very exciting concept and commitment around Black food sovereignty, which is one of the few jurisdictions to commit to food sovereignty, particularly Black food sovereignty. And, you know, I was excited to see the, you know, recognition and awareness and efforts towards it, Indigenous reconciliation, although what we're reconciling, I'm not sure. There was never a good relationship. But the lack of walk that goes with the talk is incredibly frustrating. And I don't blame any individuals, but I see a number of factors that makes it very hard for the city to function. So, you know, even at this point where we've had to do our work outdoors because we couldn't maintain the room in the community center, they won't zone anything, won't change any zoning in the neighborhood so that we can grow food, distribute food, cook food, whatever. You know, there's just these ridiculous obstacles that are the exact opposite of what the policy statements and commitments are. I was there at the beginning of the Food Policy Council. It was great, great discussions, great conversations, great direction, no enforceability, no accountability. And that's what really characterizes Canada, the province, the city, is lots of talk, no accountability, no way to make them walk. And if we're going to walk the Dish with One Spoon treaty and survive as a region of humans, it's going to have to change, and it's going to have to change dramatically. And the first way to change that is for civil society and civil service to be able to work together. And civil service is going to have to like start being more holistic, less siloed, less linear, and less inclined and sort of programmed to pick and choose and resist and divide and conquer amongst communities. Like I even noticed that funding that came out for Black and Indigenous food, or was it food or just community development? It was for Black and Indigenous, and you had to tick one or the other. Well, what if you're both? And, you know, are you going to pit Black communities against Indigenous communities in the scramble for land that we've both been denied for centuries? Like, you know, the recognition that we need to walk this together, that we were, you know, both enslaved and colonized, and that we need to build equity together, doesn't seem to reflect in the approach of the city or the governments that unfortunately are no longer really seemingly capable of responding or innovating.
The Toronto Food Charter can be found on the City of Toronto website. I'm Daniel Centeno. You're listening to CGRU 1280 AM. This story is part of the Local Journalism Initiative.